trouble. This is Ranger Kidwell Ross, the editor of WorldSweeper.com and the director of the World Sweeping Association. Today we're speaking with two gentlemen that are both experts on what's happening in some contract clauses. Unfortunately, for Tom Tanner, who is the head of A1 Sweeping Service in Salinas, California, he's on the receiving end of his knowledge, where he's been had contracts submitted to him that have clauses that are simply not acceptable. The other person we have on the line with us today is Scott Sorosky, and he is the marketing manager for the contractor segment of the pavement maintenance industry through Crum & Forster. Crum & Forster's home office is Conway, Arkansas. I'm going to start by reading just a paragraph of the contract that instigated all of this that Tom sent to me. And it's a clause entitled Damages Caused by Service Provider. And it says, if service provider or any subcontractor or supplier of service provider or anyone else for whose acts service provider may be liable, that's pretty open-ended, right? Should by any act or omission cause delay to project work, service provider shall be liable for all losses, costs, expenses, liability, and damages, including liquidated damages sustained by the company that's providing the contract, or for which that company may be liable to its owner, who it's working for, or any other party because of such act or omission. And then further on, the service provider, in this case, Tom, the sweeping company, whoever that might be, agrees to provide such protection as is necessary to protect the employees of the company that's providing the contract and other subcontractors and service providers from the service provider's operations. And it goes on to read that the sweeping contractor in this case shall be liable for any loss or damage to any project work in place or to any equipment or materials on the project site caused by the service provider or any party for whose acts the service provider may be liable. Now, that's a very far-reaching set of words, and essentially what it portrays is that the sweeping contractor, who may never see the master contract, even if they are hired by another subcontractor especially, is essentially liable for anything that they do or anything they don't do. So if they show up with their sweeper and something happens, or if they don't show up for some reason and the crew is left on the job waiting for the sweeper, according to the contract provisions, they would be liable for that as well. So at this point, I'm going to turn it over to Tom, who started the ball rolling on this, and give us your take on that, Tom, please.
Well, the commissions part is totally understandable. You commit something. It's the omissions part that is scary, in that it's not just if you hit something or injure something or leave a banana peel on the job or damage something. Though all of those things are covered by your auto and liability insurance, but the omissions part could be construed to mean even not showing up. I don't know, there's a dispatch error or you broke down and you're not able to, your backup is not within striking distance. Repair people, and all of a sudden you could be faced with a humongous bill of a delay time, which, if you, as you know, from a crew of 20 or 30 paving people and all of their related subs, can start adding up to a lot of money very quickly. And there are inspectors that can shut a job down for lack of a sweeper. For something as simple as a flat tire, whatever, driver drops dead, whatever, and all of a sudden you could get a bill for $40,000. There is nothing to submit a claim to because nothing has been committed. You haven't struck anything. You haven't injured anything. It's merely a failure to perform. And even I'm even worrying, what if it's just a question of quality? Somebody could claim weeks later, well, gee, the asphalt didn't stick good enough. It sounds like the sweeping wasn't good enough. Let's rip out a mile of freeway and start all over. You know, you can start to see the money's involved when there's nothing that you've, you know, you're just at the mercy of your equipment.
Well, and you're also, this is Ranger again, you're also at the mercy of however somebody might view that, because the contract says may be responsible for. So in that case, your contract would be, and your service would be the lead in liability, in which case, now we'll move on to Scott. Scott, let's say his company insures you. They would then have to, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, Scott, but you would have to hire an attorney for Tom's company, and you'd also have to hire an attorney for any other company named in the suit, or oftentimes you would have to do that. So I'll let you weigh in on that now, Scott, please.
All right. With these scenarios as you described them, let me try to simplify. And again, I will make a generic statement in reference to general liability and automobile liability insurance in general, not specific to our program, but in general terms of the way general liability and auto liability respond to claims. The first response is, or the first trigger, I should say, to have a policy respond, i.e., general liability or auto, you would first have to have property damage and or bodily injury as a result of the actual work performed. In the case of an auto, the auto would have to have damaged someone else's property or injured somebody or hit a vehicle or something of that nature. That's for an auto. For general liability, you would have to have damaged someone's property through the performance of your work and or damaged somebody or injured somebody or, in some cases, extreme cases, caused a death within the scope of performing your operations, your work. Now, those situations would then trigger a claim and trigger defense coverage on behalf of the insured, meaning Mr. Sweeper Company or Mr. Paving Company or whoever it may be. So that's the generic statement in terms of what triggers either or both of those two policies to respond to an incident. Now, with regards to the omission, as Tom mentioned, the omission part of the contract, and I will give you a scenario. And with respect to not showing up as per the scope of the contract on time, for various and many reasons, as you mentioned, Tom, could be a broken down vehicle, could be your driver on the way en route to the job got into an accident, your driver became sick or ill, or wasn't able to make it to the job, or started to make it to the job and got sick and had to turn around and go back, and there was no planning for a substitute vehicle or person to respond to for that specific duty for that day or evening. Now, that is not a general liability claim or an automobile liability claim because there was no physical damage or injury to any property or person within the scope of the operations, because there were no operations performed yet. So the way there would be coverage provided for that, and I will give you a real-world claim scenario that we just finished with on one of our program members, was this very same scenario. It was a paving milling job on an interstate. The sweeping contractor was working for as a subcontractor to the milling contractor who had the primary contract with the state. The driver for the sweeping company, the driver did not show up that evening. The driver was actually sick. There was no conveyance of that to the dispatcher, and it was a nighttime sweep for this milling contractor. So the driver doesn't show up. Therefore, there was no alternative means of following the milling machine by the milling contractor. There was no substitute sweeper on site. Therefore, the milling contractor had to lay layer of pavement, but not final layer, and they had to lay it because they had to get off the highway within the directed point of time in the contract that they had with the state. And then then they would have to go the next day and re-mill that layer of pavement. And then once they had a sweeping contract, a sweeper in place, and then the claim became the cost to lay down that layer of first layer of pavement so that they could close the job and get off the roadway. And it was the cost of that and the cost of remilling that and then repaving it again. Now, the sweeping contractor did not have any part in performing any work, so they didn't cause any property damage. They didn't hurt anybody. Their driver just did not show up. However, the sweeping company was made aware of that. The manager was made aware of that via text that evening and communicated that they would quickly get a replacement operator to the job site. However, since milling and sweeping job is ongoing, they can't hold and wait for a replacement sweeper to show. They had to do, as I just explained, lay down a course of pavement and then wait for the next day to re-mill it and pave it again. The claim was not a bodily injury claim or it wasn't a property damage claim. It was a failure to perform claim. And the monetary value related to that failure to perform was the cost for laying down the first course of pavement, then the next day having to remill that course of pavement and then have it done properly. There's no general liability or auto liability policy that pays for that type of claim being made against the sweeping contractor. Because again, as I reiterate, there's no property damage, there's no bodily injury or death to trigger a claim. So what covers that potential type of claim? The only thing that would protect the sweeping contractor and, in an instance, the milling contractor for a claim that the state may bring against them, because that's part of the state contract, of which, Ranger, you're right. The sweeping contractor, in most cases, not privy to the state contract that the milling contractor has. They're just a sub. So what covers that type of omission or failure to show or failure to perform? The only instrument that protects that is a performance bond. And a performance bond would be taken out by the sweeping contractor in the event that this would happen. And then there would be a claim made against the performance bond for the monetary damage. And I'm not talking bodily injury or property damage. I'm talking about for its time and material monetary damage. To have to rip up the first course to mill the first course and then again repave. That was the claim on this job. And it was fairly sizable because there was a length of, there was some mileage that they had to lay down that wasn't obviously contemplated. Now, through this whole process, the sweeping contractor found out that in the primary contract that the milling contractor had with the state, they were responsible for making sure that they had alternate or backup equipment and manpower in the event, as Tom alluded to, that a sweeper breaks down, that there's an incident en route to the job, if there's a traffic delay, as many times happens, and the sweeper contractor can't make it to the site, that there's always an alternate so that they don't run into this scenario. Because, i.e., there could also be a scenario where the milling machine would break down. And the milling machine, then they can't mill, and they'd have to go through the same practice of laying a course of pavement and having to redo it again the next day. So through all of this, the settlement, it had to go to court. The problem with the entire, this one specific claim, was that there was no performance bond put in place by either the sweeping contractor to the milling paving company and or the milling paving company to the state. My understanding, that's what happened. So the general liability policy has no response or responsibility to get involved in this, nor does the auto liability insurance carrier. Now there's no bond. So what ends up happening? The sweeping company has to get their own attorney, so they're not provided defense. There's no bond, and they have to negotiate with this. I guess it went through court. The milling contractor sued the sweeping contractor. Inevitably, what ended up happening was, because it was so lengthy, that the sweeping contractor, who, by the way, continued to do work for this milling contractor while this claim went on, those two principals decided to come to the table together and settle it on their own. So the moral of the whole story is, by virtue of the contract and the stipulations set forth in the contract, the only time that a general liability policy and or an auto liability policy will be called to respond is if there's property damage and or injury caused to persons or property, and that the claim is predicated purely on the scope of work as defined within the written contract. Outside of that, for omissions or failure to appear on a job let me just take it another step further and maybe even clarify it better. Let's say this sweeping contractor did show up, but didn't really perform to within the services required by the miller or the paver, and said they didn't do a good enough job, let's say. That's, again, not a trigger for a general liability or property damage claim, because there was no damage or injury. It was just poor performance. So therefore, what would be the instrument? The instrument to cover that would be a performance and payment bond, as we call it in our industry. It covers for the performance or lack thereof and the payment to any subs or ancillary claimants for the lack of that service or the lack of the performance within the scope of the work. Hopefully that helps identify the different scenarios of what type of policy and or instrument covers for what type of claim.
And an errors and omissions policy isn't available that would cover that sort of thing?
No, an errors and omissions policy, Ranger and Tom, are usually, that's a coverage whereby specs for a job are developed by a contractor and or their licensed engineers or surveyors. Professional errors and omissions is usually architects, engineers, real estate professionals, us as insurance professionals, when we make a mistake, if we make a mistake. That's our errors and omissions insurance. The professional liability, as we call it, which is errors and omissions, a contractor could obtain that, but that would apply to a contractor, for instance, drawing specs and recommendations within a certain job scope or contract that they, for instance, if a state comes to a paving contractor and says, give me the specs, if you will, to pave this roadway. What do we have to do? How much layer of existing pavement do we need to mill? And how much do we have to resurface? Are we doing the shoulders? All these various things are then professional services that if those services are found to be inadequate or inaccurate in when the contractor draws those specs, that would be an error as an omission. In the actual performance of the services, i.e. sweeping, not showing up, not performing according to scope, that's a performance-related incident, and that is covered by a performance and payment bond. So, an example, let's say the milling and paving job is, $1 million job, and the sweeping portion of that is $150,000, let's say. So now all of a sudden the sweeping portion of the $1 million paving and milling job, the sweeping portion of 150 is really the exposure, we call it in our industry, that the sweeper has to that entire contract, because they're not doing the actual milling, they're not doing the actual pavement, they're not doing any specs or recommendations or offerings in that regard for services. So then, if there is a claim, it would be the bond that they would take out, the performance bond limit, would be the $150,000, because that's the portion of the contract, the entire contract, that the sweeper's responsible for, you see? So that's basically, and I hope I didn't confuse, I tried to be as succinct as I could in what triggers a claim from each type of policy, and what the exposures are that represent those types of claims.
So, Tom, do you have comments on that, given that you're the person that is out there on the firing line and receiving these kind of boilerplate contracts? You had several that you offered. This is, you're in California where things start up and seem like they move to the rest of the country. What's your take on that?
Yes, as you mentioned, over the last 15 or 20 years, we began to see more and more of this type of wording, which was spelled out very clearly and is very representative that you read at the start of this, is similar wording. And I want to comment that, yes, the errors and omissions, I've researched into that, and it was as said that that deals with paperwork errors, not what we're talking right about now, so we can dismiss that. As far as performance right bonds, I looked into that, too, for the very fear, as remote as it may be, as conscientious as I may be, to have spares within striking distance, yet we are all at the mercy of our equipment. Scenarios like was spelled out can happen to anybody. I looked into performance bonds and was told that, number one, they're, correct me if I'm wrong, they're only available to industries that have contractors' licenses. Now, I'm speaking for California. I know this is a national call, but as far as California goes, Sacramento issues no such contractor's license for, quote, sweeping, unquote. Now, that's not to say that some sweepers don't have a contractor's license, but it's in an ancillary related field. So, but for somebody who's doing strictly sweeping and attempts to get it a contractor's license from the CSLRB, whatever that is, they're going to come up empty-handed. There is no such license available. And even if there could be, let's just pretend they have a license in a related field, yet they would have to continually perpetually take out a bond for every single job they do, that there isn't one available for, quote, all jobs or all annual jobs, correct me if I'm wrong, and which becomes prohibitive. I mean, we do jobs for 400 here, 500 there, 10,000 here, 10,000 there.
Right.
It's not conceivable. So that's where we're at.
Well, that's a good point, Tom. And let me elaborate on that as well. I see contracts from virtually all states across the country. And you're right. In some states, based on licensing requirements by the state and/or specific municipalities within the state, those scenarios would not apply to certain trades. With that said, the contract as Ranger alluded to earlier and read from, a lot of the contracts like that we see are boilerplated contracts given out in relative to all types of general services.
Right.
So, for instance, there's no sweeping involved in this specific contract that's left. Now, there could be a guardrail contractor that's going to go put a whole slew of mileage up on the guardrail, okay? Now, or install guardrail. Now, the performance bond situation would really come into play and apply to that clause within the contract for performance. You understand? So what happens, we see inevitably, is they have this verbiage in these contracts that may not specifically apply to certain of the trades, but it may apply to others. But they don't cross it out. So what you really have to do when you get these contracts is say, look, I understand that I'm supposed to be responsible only for any incident as it relates directly within the scope of work for which I'm being contracted to perform. That goes without saying. So while your employee is sweeping, they damage someone's property, or they injured somebody, or they're in a vehicular accident, you, yes, would be held accountable for that, or any portion of that. And that goes without saying. And your insurance would provide coverage to those additional insureds for that scenario. Now, for the omissions part, and for the non-performance or not showing up part, what you should do when you see that in those contracts and agreements, say, look, I see this clause in this contract. You have to understand there's no coverage. Our general liability policy doesn't pay for that, nor does anybody else's. And our auto policy doesn't pay for that. So either you line it out, or if you're asking for us to provide coverage for that, then we would have to get a performance bond. Now, is that going to happen on these small sweeps or contracts? No, but what you have to do is be a little proactive, and when you see, and I'm glad you were, Tom, when you see that clause in there for those emissions and those types of things, it's not applicable to your operations. Unless they want it to be, then they, and this is what we do all the time with other types of contracts in, you know, around the country, if they want you to guarantee, okay, if your sweeper doesn't show up and we have a delay, you're going to get charged for that. You're responsible for that. No problem, Mr. Contractor or Mr. Owner. If you want us to be held accountable for that, then we're going to have to take out a performance bond, and the cost of that bond would be included in the bid that we give you for our work.
But is that bond even available for time and material? Because we don't flat bid jobs. We're time and material.
Well,
is that even available?
Well, you'd have to discuss with your agent, because most agents or agents, there are agents that have access to, you know, surety and bonding. That's what we call it, surety coverage. They would get a bond. But for those types of small jobs like that, you're right. It's almost next to impossible. Have we gotten them over the years? Yes. They are attainable. But there's a cost for it. And usually I'll give you the average cost of a performance and payment bond is anywhere between 1 and 2%, sometimes up to 2.5% of the contract amount or the service, total service amount, contract amount. That's how they base the premium. That's
but if you're
premium.
Billing by the hour and not a flat rate, how do you know what the end bill is going to be?
Then what you do is when you fill out a bond application for a bond for that specific contract, you estimate the amount of hours, and you can always change a bond limit. So like I gave you in that scenario, the sweeping portion of the $1 million, paving a million jobs was $150,000, just the sweeping portion. So the bond limit was $150,000. Now, you're right, that was time and material, so it was estimated based on mileage. So they say, okay, if we're going to pave and mill or sweep for a paved milling job on X amount of miles, we know that's roughly with our time and material charges for that sweeper, for that man hour, this is what it would roughly be. And it ended up being $150,000. And that can be a moving target. You can always change that, but it gives at least an established bond limit to get a price.
Okay,
on the bond.
But what if the damages of cool down asphalt and penalties by the state and ripping back out paved, what if that exceeds the 150? Then who's left paying the balance?
Well, that's the thing, because you take just the sweeping portion. Now, let me just back up. I was just talking about if our sweeping contract was 150 and we didn't perform our sweeping operations according to the scope of work that we said we'd perform. So if that's the case, that's our exposure. Now, if they say, no, you have to provide us a bond for, and we've seen this, we want you to give us 2 times the sweeping contract amount for a bond limit, which would then cover the ancillary charges that would accrue as a result of the sweeper not showing up, i.e. ripping up the asphalt, resurfacing it again, resweeping it again. So, yes, the contractor or owner of the job would stipulate the face amount of the performance bond. That would be inclusive of those exposures.
And then in the contract, would there be a limitation of liability based on the height of the required performance bond?
Yeah, because and that's the thing, Ranger. That's a good point, because in the contract, when they ask for, you know, if you don't show up, that type of that verbiage that you described in that contract, they would say that then you would have to have a performance bond to protect for that, because the contract, the million sweep or paving contract and or the muni that hands out the contract, should their risk management people that write those stipulations, those insurance provisions and the like, should be requesting that, okay, in lieu of your, or I shouldn't say in lieu of, in addition to your general liability, your auto insurance and all of that that you have to give us, you also have to give us a performance and payment bond to protect for all the things we just discussed, not showing up, poor job done, all of that. And I think the best way to remember all of this, and it gets in depth, I think to simplify it, all you have to remember when you look at a contract that said, okay, this is what we're being hired to perform. Our general liability and auto policy only covers 2 things, well, 3 things, but bodily injury and or property damage. And then there's other things in there, contractual liability, that's if you breach the contract. That's not a performance thing. That's something else. But those are really the two basic components of a general liability and auto policy response. All the other things that we just talked about are performance bond related. Not showing up, doing a poor job, you're not damaging property, you're not hurting anybody or killing anybody, you're just not performing according to the terms of the contract.
So are those performance bonds available for all operations, quote-unquote, annual, quote-unquote, or do they have to be each job specific?
They're job. That's a good point. They are job specific. The only time that we've seen performance bonds requested by some owners, property owners and or municipalities, whereby that service provider, that sweeping contractor, let's say, would have a contract to service five sites for X amount of dollars through the year for a certain contract amount. The bond would be specific to that contract, but specific and inclusive of all of the five sites that contract represents. You understand? So, yes, it could include multiple sites, but as long as the bond is to the same owner, all right? So you can't get, maybe to answer your question more specifically.
Well, when you say owner in the case, let's say, of a city, but what about a general contractor that's doing jobs for 20 different owners during a year?
No, because then it goes to just each one of those jobs that general contractor is contracting you to perform. Then the performance, because remember, not all of those contracts may have that stipulation for all of those different sites in terms of performance. And look, here's what I suggest. I think what happens, I know in fact what happens because I've experienced this, unfortunately, over these many years, is that you, the service vendor, need to take that contract and say, oh, okay, yes, we give you this for our GL, yes, we give you that for our auto and our umbrella and our workers' comp, all of that. However, there's this other clause you have in this contract, and it's really a performance issue or an errors and omissions exposure. That doesn't apply to us. Then you have them strike that. And they go, oh, yeah, that would be like if we hire an architect or an engineer. Because, again, these contracts a lot of times are boilerplate. And I literally just went through the same thing 3 weeks ago with a Matt Cowley. And I don't know if you know Matt Cowley on the West Coast, but they're a large, you know, real estate conglomerate, conglomerate of corporate real estate properties. And they vendor out services to our power sweeping community. And there was a stipulation in there for limits of coverage that were completely unrelated, we found out, because that was if they hired a contractor to rip the roof off their buildings, not for the guys that are on boots on the ground and servicing the blacktop. So they wanted a $5 million umbrella limit. Then we found out that their certificate of insurance sample that they sent us shows only a $3 million limit. And when I called the risk managers in Boston of Matt Cowley, the risk managers there said, do you folks realize you have a conflict of requirement? Your contract says you want the contract to have $5 million in coverage, but your certificate sample says $3 million. So I said, which is it? Oh, that's right. For the sweeper, we only need $3 million because they're not doing any construction. I said, well, you might want to stipulate that better in your contract because remember one thing. Insurance to get covered, Tom, the only way, and again, I'm making generic statements. I'm not talking about our insurance program. I'm making generic industry statements. The only way a general liability policy responds, and you'll always see this in the terminology at the bottom of a certificate, so it always says, as per written contract. Coverage is provided under this policy as per written contract, meaning they're not going to go any broader or any further outside of what the written contract stipulates. You understand?
Right.
That's what the coverage provides.
In the case of the opening example of the driver who got sick or failed to show up for dispatching purposes, that could be deemed to be in a contract to show up. So they So they would be at the risk of that type of problem.
No, you're 100% right. But remember again, you have to go back. Generically speaking, the only thing that triggers general liability coverage, all right, when you get into, you have to have some sort of cause some damage or injury to somebody and or property, you know, or death in the performance of your operations. By the mere virtue of not showing up, that's not contractual liability.
Well, wait. What do you call the example contract I sent you and Ranger that distinctly does say omissions? Is that not written in there?
No. Yeah, but that's not your general liability doesn't provide coverage for that. The only coverage that would be provided for that clause in that contract, if that were to happen, if you just like the scenario I gave with the sweeping company, we sent the claim to the general liability carrier. They made a million, and the sweeping company made a $400,000 claim against the sweeping contractor. $400,000.
Right.
So they made the claim. I said, wait, there's no general liability coverage here because your guy just didn't show up. You didn't damage anything or hurt anybody. So was there a performance bond? No, there was no performance bond.
But had that sweeper signed an omissions clause like the example that Ranger read when we started, if they had, then why? It seems to me like they would have been liable for that $400,000.
No. Just by the mere fact of signing the clause, and listen, the sweeping contractor signed the clause. And we're signed the contract that had the clause in it. Let me put it that way. What inevitably happened in this case, and I can't speak for every contract being the same, but for the mere fact that they signed the contract didn't encumber the insurance company to pay a claim just because the sweeping guy didn't show up, because there was no trigger for the claim. You understand? So what the contractor has to do or should have done, we say, hey, wait a minute, there's a clause in here that if we don't show up, you're supposed to, you know, we're supposed to have we're responsible for the liquidated damages of that, which happened in this case. They had to put that first clause down and renew it. So in signing that, you're supposed to say, oh, okay, if we're going to sign it, so we're going to have to get a performance bond, take a performance bond out, and then that's going to be taxed at cost of that, the 1% to 2%. It's going to be factored.
Okay, but if
the
they don't get a performance bond, who's paying that $400,000?
That's who ended up paying. Well, here's what ended up happening in this case. First of all, the contractor had to shove money out of their pocket because, as I told you, the sweeping contractor and the milling paving contractor called each other. They got each other on the phone and said, we're spending all this money in attorney's fees because, remember, the paving and milling contractors insurance couldn't pay for that either because they didn't have a bond. They didn't even have a claim to their own insurance company for that. They had to suck it up. So what did they end up doing? They sat at the table and they split the difference. That's what they ended up doing.
Okay, well, split the difference. $200,000 for a job.
Let me just tell you, the claim was $400,000. It wasn't anywhere near that. That's what they claimed. It wasn't anywhere near that. That was the claim.
Still, we can't speak to, a specific, because what we're really talking about is a general overall. So, as Thomas started to say, you know, he might be getting $20,000 for the job. The claim is for $400,000. It appears to me that these clauses should be struck out if they're open-ended like that, where you might well be sued for much higher than the amount of sweeping that's in the contract to start with. And if you would have to get a performance bond, but the performance bond would necessarily need to be for an amount in excess of the possible profit that you might make by far, or the possible the amount, the overall amount, that essentially what we've learned, as far as I can see, as kind of looking over it as from on high a little bit, is that you just say no, that's not really, you can't afford to accept those contracts.
No. Let me respond
see, what
to
happens
that.
Again, see, Tom, like I said, let's just say on this job that you're talking about, and I'm going to give you an example. There could be multiple service providers or contracts. You could have a milling, a sweeping, a milling, paving, sweeping, a guardrail person, a line striking person, or a company, all of these different service providers can be on one job. So when they let these contracts, certainly there should be performance-related, you don't show up or whatever, there's clauses in. So if it doesn't really apply to you, that contract is boilerplated. There's boilerplated language. So
okay, let me respond to that.
Okay.
Both what you're saying and what Ranger is saying is essentially line it out, and I'm sure the reasonable man will understand. My experience with that so far in the example contract I sent to Ranger, which he read at the start of this, and various others that I've had, when I go to line it out, which as you're saying and as Ranger's saying, it sounds so logical, here's the reaction that I'm getting from the general contractors, is that why should we allow you to line that out when other people are signing? It puts you on an unlevel playing field. We're simply going to call the next guy in the line in the yellow pages. Now, what I suspect is they're not reading the fine print, or they're just signing knowing that what are the odds? Let's be reasonable. What are the odds? The average, after all, my spares aren't far away, and what are the odds that my customer will be that mean to me? But, I mean, that would be analogous to saying, there's a 2,000-to-1 odds that we're going to throw your first child off the cliff if such and such happens. Now, even though the odds are remote, you're not going to sign to the contract, no matter how remote the odds are. And that's what I find myself in, is that my competitors are signing to this. They're not reading it, or they're not logically following through on the consequences.
You're 100%, and Tom, you just hit the nail on the head. That's the real world scenario that's happening. You know, Chuck with the truck is out there signing what you don't want to sign, for the very virtue of they don't know what they're signing or what they're not signing, for that matter. And it's to get the contract. Listen, I always say in this business, I will say it till the day I go in my grave, there's never a problem until there's a problem. And then the client gets this lawsuit and goes to make a claim, say, oh, you got to file this claim on this jet. I said, really? Well, you don't have any coverage. What do you mean I don't have any coverage? You don't have any coverage. That's a performance. Do you have a bond? No. I said, did you damage anything? Did you hurt anybody? No. So I sent the claim to the carrier just so that they could send a formal denial citing the actual coverage terms and conditions of the insurance policy, which they did. So the point is, you don't, and to further that statement, Tom, about not lining it out, you cannot line it out, but you should make a stipulation. Please understand that. And they would know this. Our general liability policy and our auto policy that you're asking us to provide coverage for, which we will, does not provide coverage for this provision of the contract. So you don't have to line it out. Just let them know that if for whatever reason, if there's a horrendous traffic accident, to get your sweeper to that job and the roads are closed down and your sweeper can't get to that job,
it doesn't matter whether there is or isn't coverage. As the wording that Ranger started this as an example contract wording puts the burden of financial responsibility on the sweeper, regardless of whether he has insurance coverage for that or not. Am I mistaken?
You're not mistaken at all, as long as you understand. That's a very good point. As long as you understand what you're signing on for when you sign those contracts with those stipulations in them, knowing that, just as I said, my sweeper doesn't show up on this job. I have a stipulation in this contract for performance. My guy doesn't show up or my girl doesn't show up and sweep, and I have a monetary claim brought against me because of that lack of performance, I'm sitting in the wind with that claim with no insurance. And every other truck with a truck that may sign that contract, Tom, with, like his Ranger said, whether they know that clause is in there or they know what they're signing or what they're not signing, every other sweeping contractor that signs those contracts with those clauses in there is in the same boat you are. And as I said, never a problem till there's a problem. So the minute the sweeper doesn't get to that job site, that owner or general contractor makes a claim against you for not showing up, you and everybody else that would sign that contract that doesn't have a performance bond in place is going to be out of pocket. Now, the only thing that we found in our review when we were doing this with the big milling contractor, thank God, which really minimized them coming to the amount they settled on, was that there was a small provision in the small fine print in that contract with the state, that the state made it incumbent upon the milling and sweeping contractor to have replacement and backup equipment for all of the services, meaning if their milling machine went down and they couldn't do that length, they needed to have another milling machine ready to go. If the paver didn't went down, they had to have another. They had to have one of those. If the sweeper went down, they needed to make sure they had another sweeper so that the job wouldn't be held up. So that's not our sweeping contractor's fault. That's their fault. They didn't have a backup. Our guys just didn't show up, and they didn't, you know, provide the backup. End of story. So that's a specific contract to that specific job. So the point, I guess, to really summarize is you have to read, and I'm glad you're doing that, Tom, and that's a good thing. Not many are doing what you're doing. You have to look at these contracts. You have to read these clauses because they do encumber. The problem out there, and this is what Ranger, you know, we're working on this behind the scenes right now. We're trying to bring some standardization and mitigation of exposure to this industry and boilerplate on our end some of this. But at the end of the day, nobody's reading these contracts extensively and understanding, are we really encumbering our businesses by signing on the bottom line with all of the stipulations in there? That's really at the end of the day what this comes down to.
But to summarize on this end, what I believe is I'm hearing is that if you are a sweeping contractor only in an area where there is no contractor's license required to be a sweeping contractor and you don't have a contractor's license, then you can't get a performance bond, generally speaking. So you have to either accept the liability because you can't insure against it, or find someone that'll issue a performance bond to someone who's not a contractor. Unlikely.
Well, I to Tom's point, yeah, in California specifically, if you don't have a contractor's license, that precludes you from really obtaining. I'm not familiar with
any state that requires. And I certainly could be wrong on this because I don't know the rules in all states. Yeah. But I'm not familiar with any state that requires a contractor's license for a sweeping company.
Yeah, I haven't heard that either myself. And by the way, Tom, there are states you don't have to have a contractor's license to get a performance bond. I could have, you know, I could be an individual Scott Cerovsky Sweeping Services, DBA or whatever, and I can say, oh, wow, I just got this contract. Look at this. I better get a performance bond. I can go down to the local broker that sells performance bonds and say, here. And to get a performance bond is not always easy either because it's a financial guarantee. You have to submit financial information, income statement, balance sheets, all that stuff.
Well, yeah. I mean, and when you've got a $1,000 job here, a $500 job there,
yeah,
it starts to become ridiculous.
Yeah, it does. It most definitely does. And I'm not disagreeing. I'm completely agreeing with you. It's absurd. That's why, as long as you, with those smaller jobs, listen, this was a big milling and sweeping job. This, without a doubt, should have had a performance bond on. Without a doubt. This is different. What you're saying is true. It's not practical. So therefore, the thing I'm trying to say is not line out. Just let them know, look, you understand, my sweeper doesn't show up, and my guy breaks down, or there's a like I said, there's a traffic accident, and we can't get to the job because the police have the road shut down, and there's no spare to get there in time. We don't have insurance that covers. Nobody has insurance that covers for that. Nobody. There's not a general liability policy that pays for you not showing up on the job. No.
Well, and then they would merely say, fine, you pay out of pocket. And they can come after they can lean my company, they can...
Very much. Unfortunately, unless they were able to be somewhat receptive to having that provision of the contract not apply, you're right. You're right. That's your assumption that you make as a business owner to do that work. Just that one stipulation. All the other stuff is fine.
I have a suspicion that... I have a suspicion that a lot of people, even if they read it and think through the ramifications, they're probably thinking, what are the odds? And if some kind of $400,000 claim came and they didn't have that burning a hole in their pocket, they're probably thinking they can just walk away and, well, what's the worst that can happen? They're just not going to use my service again. And they'll simply sign on the what are the odds sort of a basis, and that leaves those of us who are not signing at a disadvantage. I've been told point blank by the specific contract I sent to Ranger as an example that, well, you know, we've got other people that have signed to this. Why should we use you? And I know full well they have no intention of paying $400,000 out of pocket, and nor do they probably, I'm guessing they don't have performance bonds, but they're just going on the what are the odds sort of basis, you know?
You are 100% correct. That's 100% accurate. That's the dilemma for the industry right now. The dilemma is the ones that just say, you know what, this is in the contract, they're not going to line it out, or they're not going to take any stipulations relative to that clause. We don't have a bond. That's too small anyway. If something happens, my sweeper doesn't show up, they're going to come after me for monetary damages. And according to the contract, they're going to come after me because you're signing the contract, so it encumbers you right away. And I don't have insurance for it. And I don't have insurance for it, so I got to suck it up. That's really, you're 100% right. That's the
real
world.
And also, psychologically, in their mind's eyes, put yourself in their shoes. If I'm making the claim that I'm making now, in their mind's eyes, it almost sounds like I want to shirk responsibility and I'm planning on being some lackadaisical, I don't care, and, you know, screw you if I don't show up. Well, that's far from the truth. Of course I intend to stand behind my work and put spares on site and have people waiting on standby. I'm only preparing for the worst-case scenario. But in their mind's eyes, they're thinking, oh, this guy plans on being some irresponsible.
Must happen all the time or he wouldn't have brought it up.
Right. I guess, yeah. I mean, no, we have a very impeccable, you know, reputation. I have spares on site all the time, but I'm also realistic and know if I have a driver that drops dead or something, I mean, what's going to happen to me, you know?
Sure, that traffic accident.
You know what? We had that happen. I have to tell you, we had an operator that had a heart attack. This goes about 8 years ago, Ranger. Had an operator had a heart attack on the way to the facility to get the sweeper. The dispatcher, now there's all different types of, you know, reporting systems in a lot of these companies now, 24/7 reporting to dispatch and all this other stuff some of the more elaborate companies have to prevent this from happening. So the guy doesn't show, the guy's dead. Never went and picked up the machine to go to the job. Nobody knew. Nobody knew. So they get a call, but it wasn't until the next morning because it was a midnight sweep. So it was, it was a construction sweep. It wasn't a milling, something else, a construction job on a bridge job or something. I can't remember specifically. So no sweeper, no driver until the next day. How is somebody supposed to know that?
And I think the... You know, we're going back to a potential solution here. Is the only one that I can see is a statement, you know, maybe as World Sweeping Association, for example, but then again, this only affects our members, is we have a statement that's submitted that is an addendum that says in recognition that no insurance policies cover this, we recommend to our contractors that they not take, you know, it's irresponsible of them to take a contract that has these provisions in it.
Yeah.
But that's not really a solution.
I don't know about that so much, because that might hold guys like Tom out in the wind. And I'll tell you what, you have to look at these. I'm starting to learn after almost 30 years of this stuff. You have to look at it as discretionary. Like Tom's point, I got a sweep job, it's going to be $1,000. I got a sweep job, it's going to be $3,000, whatever it is. It's not 200, 150. It's a couple thousand here, a couple thousand there. I think, as a business owner, Tom, and you correct me if I'm wrong, you would have to look at those scenarios discretionarily and make it and almost establish a threshold of a contract dollar value. What can I, as a business owner, afford to assume and still stay within the good graces of my customer and say, we're going to set a threshold. I'm not going to go out on the limb for anything more than $25,000. After that, if these clauses are in the contract, and again, I'm just using a random number, because the comfort level, as you can imagine, Ranger, you know some of these sweepers, the comfort level might be a lot more for some than it is for others monetarily. So those thresholds can change. So Tom might have a threshold, say, I'm going to keep my customers happy. I'm not going to disrupt his contract language, knowing sure well that I don't have coverage in the event my sweeper doesn't show up. I'm not going to tell him to take that out of the contract because I don't want to disturb that relationship. So I have a comfort level of 5,000, let's say. But after 5,000, I'm not going any more than that. Either I tell him my insurance doesn't cover this and we need to get a bond on this job, or I'm just walking away from the job. I think that's almost an individual decision. I think the global response has to be, as we're discussing this, is that, hey, we're taking a keen-eye approach and seeing that these clauses are in these contracts. Now we understand, because we have some insight as to how insurance performs or doesn't perform in the event of not showing up or whatever may be the case. So now we say there's these clauses that encumber us, so at least it's an awareness, it's nothing else, it's an awareness that these clauses do exist. And now, what is the individual business owner's comfort level to assume that risk? And Tom, correct me if I'm wrong, you own your business, you're a very bright person. Is that, because that's what I see. I see business owners having different comfort threshold levels, if you will, yeah.
My hope is that the publicity of this issue through the podcast here that's going to be out is that the sweepers that are presented with this type of language would do just as I've attempted to do and cross it off. If there's solidarity that this effort can bring about, then the others of us that are holding our line are not going to face the psychological pressure to sign just because Joe Blow, Chuck with a truck did. If there's solidarity to not sign, then they're going to have to take it. I mean, if they want a sweeper, they're going to have to take it, and they're going to see that it's not just some lone guy that's just looking to shirk his responsibility, but it's just common sense, you know, not sacrificing your first child sort of a scenario.
Well, that's where the value of an article can come in, and, you know, people can distribute, print the article out, make it a PDF file, distribute it out to their competitors so that everybody is aware of that, that's the occurrence, as an example. However, when you go back to what's my comfort level is $5,000 or my comfort level is $25,000, it strikes me that there's an enormous difficulty in assessing what we're talking about, because it's open-ended. It's not, this is a $5,000 contract or this is a $25,000 contract, so I'll go ahead and handle it without a performance bond or without a worry, but it's, I have a $5,000 contract and I might get a bill for $80,000. Mm-hmm. Now what?
Yeah.
Because that's the part that's open-ended. When you're signing a contract like this, the claim is open-ended. It has nothing to do with your contract amount. And that, to me, is very disturbing.
Well, you know what, Ranger? That's a very good point, and you're right. It does become the dilemma of what is the monetary, you know, exposure should the machine not show up on the job, in, like in this case with the, you know, the milling paving crew having to lay pavement and the cost of that plus the cost of reclaiming it again and then repaving again. That was really the dollar value assigned to that claim. So, you know, those are real numbers. I guess it was just that one provision in there that the attorney for the sweeper found that the milling guy was responsible for having a substitute or backup. So that kind of let him off the hook a little bit. But overall, again, it's, and I, you know, I try not to be so redundant, but I have to sometimes. People sign this, sign that, do this, do that, inevitably to get the work, and on it, nobody expects anything ever to happen. Nobody wants anything to happen. Nobody wants an accident. Nobody wants anybody to get hurt. You know, everybody wants to just go do their job and get paid. Then there's an issue. Then the claims come in, and that's where, as long as I think as long as there's cognizance of what the exposures are, what the risks are, and is there coverage provided to protect against that? That, I think, is, if nothing else, has to be the big message. But, again, too, Tom, you'd be surprised. There isn't a lot of diligence out there. Everybody thinks when they get their policy in that, oh, I got a lawsuit. Send it to my insurance agent. Send it in the claims. I'm covered. I can't tell you over the years, and again, I speak generically. I'm trying to speak globally and generically that, you know, you insurance doesn't pay for everything, you know? Well, I had health insurance. Oh, really? Yeah, well, they need to do, you know, extensive brain surgery on me. Oh, really? Well, here's your copay. Here's your this. Here's your that. Here's where you can go. You can't go to this specialist. Can't go here. Every policy has terms, conditions, and limitations in it.
Right.
And I just think that, I think I did, when I did the seminar on contractual liability at NPE last year, Ranger, I asked everybody raise your hand and tell me when's the last time you read your policy jacket to jacket, cover to cover. There wasn't a hand that went up in the room. My hand didn't go up in the room.
When's the last time that you read your policy and could understand it all word for word?
Yeah, exactly. If you go in and even read it, do you understand it? And look, I've been doing this a very long time, and it's taken me a very long, and I learn every day. I still learn. I don't know everything, but I know what I know, and I know what I don't know. So, and I have to tell you, unfortunately, some of the best, the knowledge that I've was able to gain over all these years came from case study and you know, actual events. And just doing this contract stuff, I've had to read policies jacket to jacket and understand them, those terms, conditions, and the exclusions. So that's why I'm working so hard with the industry, with Ranger, with the group, and World Sweeper, and the whole industry in its entirety, just try to bring some semblance and some, make it a level playing field for the power sweeping community against the, you know, the property owners, managers, general contractors, because they're going to assign risk and try to transfer risk over to you all day long with these types of verbiages in these contracts. So,
well, I don't think we came up with a particularly effective solution. However, we did come up with a variety of information that outlines the problem and explores solutions that are not, as it turns out, solutions whatsoever. So,
I think the one, well, Ranger, if I may, I think there is a solution. It's just a matter of, is it feasible to exercise, and is it in the best interest of the particular business owner, sweeping contractor, to bring it to the attention of the people that they're signing these contracts with. And that really comes down to knowing what they have coverage for, knowing what's being imposed upon them, and then saying, we don't have coverage for this, and if you want us to sign this, we will have to obtain other coverage via an instrument of a performance and payment bond. Are you willing to accept that? So that's the solution to that one clause, if you will. But, you know, is everybody going to accept that?
Well, and I think notifying the general contractor or whoever supplying the contract that although Chuck in the truck may well have signed this contract, he is not insured for it. Unless there's a performance bond on hand, then there isn't an insurance. The insurance that he has, just like the insurance I have and that any other contractor applying has, is not going to cover it. So if
they could go after Chuck in the truck's house or his bank account.
Well, sure, they could, but if it's just a small business and he's incorporated, they're not going to get any place. So they should know that if this omissions part is important to them, then what they need to do is require a performance bond. Now the playing field is level again.
Yeah, see, that's a great point, Ranger, and that is the point. The point is to create a level playing field amongst the competitors, not to who's better or worse. Here's the contract stipulation for any and all service vendors that we go to bid this work with. They are all in the same boat. So by bringing it to their attention, i.e. example what I did with Matt Callie. Hey, by the way, guys, you have this stipulation here. It doesn't match your service. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right. Oh, wow. So I guess we got to revise our contract. When you bring it to their attention, believe me, their insurance and risk management people are going to go, oh, wow, we got this provision in this contract. We know now that no matter who we call to give us a bid, their general liability or auto policy won't cover this clause that we're asking them to protect us with. Other than us going after them personally or their business for damages resulting as it relates to this clause. So now maybe what we ought to do to create the level playing field is insert a performance and payment bond provision with that requirement.
Right. Then everybody that signs is having
there
to get the same silly foot.
There you go. And you know what, Tom? It doesn't behoove you. You're right. You're not asking them to strike that from the contract. You're merely educating them on, understand, I've talked to my insurance and risk management people. They went through this contract. It says that we're covered for all these things over here as it relates to the scope of work that we're hired to perform for you. But by the way, if our sweeper doesn't show up, nobody's insurance pays for that. The only way we can give you guaranteed coverage in the event of that happening is by a performance and payment bond. So now you're not telling them strike it from the contract. You're merely just educating them, and they can go to five chucks in the truck, and it's all the same. Their insurance policy is not giving them that coverage either. So they would have to...
Regarding the the particular $400,000 claim case you gave an example of where the paver was forced to do a little bit of generous negotiating with the sweeper because the sweeper's lawyer had found a small fine print clause that the general contractor paver had been required on their end to have contingency backups, and so therefore they had to be pretty generous in the compromise. I have actually heard humorously where general contractors, because of far-flung, you know, examples like that, have now become are even trying to prepare for that contingency by requiring the sweeper to have a backup either on-site or in striking distance. And I know of one competitor who's got some pretty expensive equipment who you just don't have a sweeper sitting around doing nothing, sitting in the waiting for, heaven forbid, something should go wrong. And they're like, wait a second, you're telling me to have a spare sweeper on site and you're not going to pay for it? And if, heaven forbid, you start charging them, because, I mean, there's, you know, lease payments. I mean, well, when you have expensive equipment, I suppose if you had a bunch of old equipment where there's no expense in just transporting a second one there that just sits. But if you're a company that's got all fresh new iron, you know, that's just sitting around doing nothing. Well, by golly, you're going to charge for it. And then all of a sudden, your price is out the door for double the price for having two sweepers on a sweeper that on a job that required one job. And then the sweepers left looking like they try to explain, well, you know, don't worry, my sweepers are very reliable. And then you're back to square one. Well, sure, but anything could happen.
Yes.
But the playing field is level. That's the important part. If everybody is required to do that, and the it's actually confirmed that they are all doing that, then the price goes up. Now, the contractor that has a piece of old iron that he can have there as a backup, he's going to be able to bid better because he's not making payments on that backup sweeper.
Right.
But still, the playing field is level.
He's a part there to park in his yard. So, and that's what happens in some of the cases we see. They, you know, when they're doing mill pave jobs, they have a staging area off the highways at various points along that stretch of roadway they're working on. And those staging areas are where that alternate equipment is kept, i.e. a milling machine or a paver or whatever. So, and there was time, my understanding also in that contract, there was also a time provision allotment to get a replacement unit to the job, and that was found. In other words, if your machine doesn't show up at X, but usually on milling jobs, it's not a big window because they have to keep moving, as you know.
Right, right.
Construction site sweeping is a little different. But on the milling job, those things have to keep rocking and rolling because you have trucks filled with blacktop.
Yeah, you got hot asphalt that's going to cool down if it sits in the truck for 2 hours. If you have a $5,000 load of asphalt that's going to go to, you know, not going to be able to be laid down.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So in any event, that's, you know, those are the things. But Tom, to your credit, you know, you've taken the diligence to go through the contract to identify exposure and to get, at least if nothing else, clarity on what the exposure is and what is it covered or not covered, and if it's not, what can you do to get it covered? And I think we've at least addressed all of that and identified those various scenarios. And again, this is common for the whole industry countrywide. Not any one state specific. It's not any one specific insurance company or provider. It's generic.
So let me bring in a this is Ranger again. Another scenario. Let's say for these types of contracts, what happens if I am bidding on these kinds of contracts, like Tom is, and I open another company that's an LLC or a corporation or whatever my attorney tells me should be, and that company doesn't have any assets. It only leases equipment from my other parent company. So everything's owned over here. Now in the secondary company, I'm leasing anything that I run, and that's the company that bids on these open-ended contracts, and then I have the insurance that's required because that's what they said. I want a $2 million liability bond or, you know, and my auto insurance and so forth, but they don't ask for a performance bond. And so the way I accept this otherwise unacceptable risk is to bid all of those jobs through a company that has essentially no assets. Now, can I insure that company?
Sure you can. You can get insurance because that's a good point, Ranger, because there will always be insurance requirements. There will always be insurance requirements for workers' comp, auto, general liability, umbrella liability. There's always going to be those insurance requirements for that. So that entity would have to provide general insurance anyway because there's always general insurance provisions within a contract. It's the performance provision then that goes the next layer of having to provide performance and payment bonds.
Right. So is that a potential solution as far as you can see from the insurance end of things?
Yeah, and to protect your other entities, your, I would say, non-bond-related work entity, yeah, I think that's a good solution. But remember another thing, and I should have mentioned this earlier. A lot of bond companies, a lot of sweeping and construction-related companies and service vendors, if they can't get bonds or they're in a situation where it's a small, it's really small, as Tom alluded to, small contracts, you can get what's called an ILOC. It's an irrevocable letter of credit, and it's basically another financial guarantee instrument you get from the bank. So let's say it's a $2,000 or $3,000 situation or whatever it might be. I don't know, something small. Sweeper doesn't show up. And the ILOC is basically sits in a escrow account, and the letter of credit is specific to that job and means if, okay, this thing goes south and they make a demand on it, that the ILOC, irrevocable letter of credit, pays. It's basically in lieu of a bond. And they're usually done, you know, when you have a good relationship with your lending institution, and they're easier to get. So that's another option. And we've had clients that have gone down that road with ILOCs.
Okay, interesting. I'll look into that.
Yeah, irrevocable letter of credit, ILOC. So that's in lieu of a bond. And you have to first check, because sometimes, and look, Tom, you may run across contracts, and we get them a lot, contracts where they actually demand a performance and payment bond. So in there, they will say, in lieu of a P&P bond, we will accept an ILOC of X, whatever that is. So, and we see that a lot on municipal work now, bond requirements. So it's prevalent.
Okay. Are there any other points that we should cover in this? Anybody can think of?
Well, I think, you know, I hope I've been able to at least, I don't know, it's a rough topic. It's very, you know, it's complicated. I hope I brought some semblance of understanding to it for you guys.
You did a good job.
Maybe I made it worse.
Well, unfortunately, they weren't the answers we were looking for. But that they're answers, and that's what provides business stability is, you know, the law protects those who know the law and or benefits them, and this will benefit because there are a couple solutions to look at. But I think most importantly is the recognition by all parties that omissions statements are not covered by insurance policies, and if you don't believe us, go ask your agent.
That's exactly right.
And if they are covered, request a letter in writing that says they're covered.
Exactly right.
Don't take anybody's
word. And if they are covered, show me where you're right. Show me where they're covered.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
Okay.
But anyway, I think, you know, again, we're working on behind the scenes to try to get some general language adopted that we can adopt as an industry so that there's no, I'm going to go to the next guy, the next guy, the next guy to get bids. Well, wait a second, the next four guys have the same language addendum that we want to add, if they want to add to our contract. That's what our goal is to accomplish, Tom, for this industry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it can't be what it's right now. It's so lopsided. They're trying to dump the whole ball of wax exposure onto this industry, and we've been sucking it up for too long, and we can't afford to do it any longer. Insurance mm-hmm. companies aren't going to accept it. You're going to be paying higher premiums if we do accept it, and that's just not. We should only, again, be responsible for the work that we're hired and contracted to perform, and that's it. Nothing outside of that.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for their time. Just as a reminder, our participants today have been Scott Sorosky, who's the marketing manager for the contractor segment of the pavement maintenance industry for Crum & Forster Insurance, and Tom Tanner, the principal in A1 Sweeping Service in Salinas, California. And our topic is one that is very, to coin a phrase, topical. Here in late 2016. This has been Ranger Kidwell Ross, editor of World Sweeper and director of the World Sweeping Association, and I hope we helped you out. If you have any questions, feel free to send an email to director@worldsweepingpros.org. Thanks, gentlemen.
Thanks much, Ranger. Thanks, Tom.